Welcome to the Homebodies podcast. Do as Charlie does.
Maybe not Sky. Anyway.
Anyways. Last time, we talked about dating apps and how our little Sky was going through them, right?
Getting exposed.
It was a really interesting episode, especially for us, for those who are looking for a little love this year, this new year.
But you know what? Going on dates with strangers can be very dangerous.
You are certainly correct. And talking about dangers in dating, this time we're going to talk about serial killers.
Wow. Let's hope to not meet one on a dating app.
Yes, but back in the day, there was no such thing as Tinder, Bumble,
Hinge.
What's that called? Hinge. And to start off with my story, we're going to talk about the infamous Miss Bell Gunnies, or Gunness. I'm just going to call her Miss Bell, a.k.a. the Black Widow.
Wow. Oh my God.
So, just to start, to outsiders, Miss Bell is a Norwegian woman that was like a lonely widow who lived in the American Midwest during the late 19th and early 20th century.
Okay. But, so, not too long ago then.
No, but on the other side, she was speculated to be a serial killer who murdered at least 14 people.
14.
And some estimate that she may have killed as many as 40 victims.
Damn, that's a lot of people.
Yes. And now let's talk a little bit about Miss Bell. She was born in Brynhild Palsdatter Storset. I think it's a place in Norwegia. I'm not entirely sure. On November 11th in 19... No. She was born in Brynhild Palsdatter Storset on November 11th, 1959 in Selbu, Norway.
Okay.
So there's little known about her early life, but for some reason or another, Ms. Bell decided to emigrate to from Selbu to Chicago in 1881. Miss Bell married to a man named Mats Ditley Sorensen in 1884. So let's say that their time together was not the greatest.
Okay.
They both opened a candy store that unfortunately soon burned down. They had four children and two allegedly died of acute colitis. Some speculate that they were actually poisoned because of some of the symptoms. But in 1900, their home burned down to the ground with like what happened to their candy store. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get the insurance money. Now, Mr. Mats, the husband, dies of a cerebral hemorrhage. And guess what day he died on? On the last day of the guy's life insurance policy, as well as the first day of his new policy.
Interesting.
Miss Bell claims both policies for in today's money, which is like 150 grand.
Okay.
Now, take note that she could only get this amount on this specific day because that's where they both crossed.
Oh.
Room for thought.
Huh.
Miss Bell left Chicago with her money, her daughters Myrtle and Lucy, with a foster daughter named Jenny Olsen, and they went to a newly acquired 48-acre farm in LaPorte, Indiana, which is 2 hours and 42 minutes of, or 151.2 miles from Indianapolis. Miss Bell was described as an incredibly strong, rugged 200-pound woman that some claim could lift a 300-pound piano all by herself. Now, Miss Bell, she marries again in April of 1902 with a man named Peter Gunnies, who took the last name. And tragedy seems to follow this lady since yet another child dies. In this instance, it was Peter's infant daughter from his previous relationship. And soon after, Peter dies as well. How he died, you may ask. And this is a little graphic, but he died apparently from a sausage grinder that fell on his head from a wobbly shelf. The coroner, or the authority in charge of her case, thought of it as a, quote, a little queer, but believe it, it was an accident. Poor Miss Bell dried her tears and got that insurance money. One person, though, wasn't really convinced by her tears. It was the foster daughter, Jenny Olsen, who allegedly told her classmates, "My mama killed my papa. She hit him with a meat cleaver and died. But don't tell a soul," she said. And soon after, little Jenny just vanished from the farm. Miss Bell claimed that she was sent to a California school, but later, we will find out what really happened to her. Maybe it was about the money, or maybe Miss Bell just had a dark secret, a thirst for blood. Either way, the two-timed widow began posting little ads on the newspapers that read, "Personal. Homely widow who owns a large farm in one of the finest districts in LaPorte County, Indiana. Desires to make the acquaintance of a gentleman equally well provided, with view of joining fortunes. No replies by letter considered, unless sender is willing to follow answer with personal visit. Triflers need not apply." That's on the ad, right?
Hmm.
Some claim that she knew how to lure her victims, how to make them come to her farm that was called Gunny's Farm. I still don't know how to say her name, her last name, but anyways. She lured in lonely Norwegian bachelors, and supposedly she used her Norwegian background and promised a great life with home cooking from Norwegia and the perfect setting because she owned land and it was like the perfect place you could be for if you missed if you missed Norway. But as we all can kind of predict, many came with thousands of dollars hoping for that like homely feel, that Norway shazam, but instead found a Grim Reaper and they all disappear without a trace. There's a testimony by one survivor, though. His name is Mr. George Anderson, who had come to the Gunny's Farm all the way from Missouri with money. And, he was hopeful. He wanted to meet this wonderful lady who had land and had so good background. But one night, he woke up and saw Miss Bell leaning over his bed as he slept. She had this ravenous expression in her eyes that like freaked him out. And so he left. He left immediately and didn't look back. Mm-hmm. Now, neighbors claim that Miss Bell spent an unusual amount of time in her hog pen during the night and seemed to spend a lot of money on wooden trunks while men appear one by one at her door just to, like, disappear. Nobody knew what was going on. They just knew that these things were happening.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. In 1906, Miss Bell connects with Andrew Helgelian or something like that. I'm sorry if you're from nowhere. I'm just butchering these names. Now, he found her on an ad in Minneapolis, Tidendi. It was called Minneapolis Tidendi. It's a Norwegian newspaper. Before long, they started exchanging romantic letters.
Wow.
He was so in love with Miss Bell that he decides to go to her, to the farm, in January 3rd of 1908. And surprise, surprise, he disappears. Once Andrew Andrew's family noticed that he wasn't replying to their letters. They started like asking Miss Bell from where they were, like, where is he? Like, where's my brother? Where's my son? But she says that he went to Chicago, maybe Norway. I don't know. Like, I can't tell you where he is. I don't know where he is. But, well, that went nowhere. And Miss Bell was quite popular. She was popular and had a few admirers, okay? One of them was Ray Lamphere, or Lamphere, I don't know, who hated that many men came to visit her. He was a little jealous. And the two apparently had a relationship, but he left when Mr. Andrew came to the farm. And so, afraid by Mr. Ray's fits of jealousy, she wanted to make a will because she thought that her life was at risk by the hands of Mr. Ray. She said to the attorney, "That man is out to get me. One of these nights, he will burn my house to the ground." And so, after doing the whole thing with the attorney, she leaves the office and goes to buy toys for her children and 2 gallons of kerosene, which, if you don't know, is a highly flammable liquid.
Oh, I see.
That night, her house was set on fire.
I see.
Authorities found the bodies of Miss Bell's 3 children in the basement of the farmhouse, and Mr. Ray Lamphere was quickly charged with murder and arson. Police started searching for Miss Bell's body, but found no results. They did find, though, later on, a headless body, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
Do you remember Mr. Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
The one that went missing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His brother read the news and came in hopes of finding his brother. He had like a gut feeling, right? He was convinced that something had happened to his brother. And although he wanted to leave because he was tired, something told him to stay. He looked and asked one of the farm workers there if there were like any holes that were digged or something suspicious. And there was. The worker says that Miss Bell had asked him to level dozens of soft depressions in the ground, which supposedly covered trash. So, you know, when you don't have anywhere to throw your trash, you just like bury it. So that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started to dig where supposedly there was trash. And to their horror, they find oozing sacks filled with Andrew's head, hands, and feet. And they kept digging and found a total of 11 burlap sacks that contained different body parts. And it was just awful.
But so they were like cut off of their bodies? Is that what that says?
Yeah, like body parts, like just chopped off.
It's really interesting because I feel like for a female, that doesn't usually happen. It's a very like gruesome for a female murder.
As awful as it is, they found 11 ones, and they think that there's more. But they couldn't identify. And they did find the body of little Jenny Olsen, the foster daughter that supposedly went to California for schooling. Soon, the newspaper spread, and Miss Bell was labeled the Black Widow, the Indiana Ogress, mistress of the Castle of Death. Reporters named her home the Horror Farm and a Death Garden because of all the stuff that they were digging and all the people. And the word spread. People started flocking into LaPorte, and it became a local and a national attraction, to the point where vendors reportedly sold ice cream, popcorn, cake, and something called the Gunness Stew to visitors. It was a whole attraction, like a whole festival in there. Because it was like 48 acres, so they really took advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
The authorities found a headless body, like I mentioned, and some teeth in the burned farm. And there was some debate whether it actually belonged to Miss Bell. But apparently, the body was too small, because remember, she's apparently a 200-pound woman, And even DNA testing that they like found on the letters that she's been like sending back and forth, it didn't help. The DNA just didn't show any results. Now, Mr. Ray Lampier was charged for arson, remember? And murder. But he wasn't at the end. He was just charged for arson, not the actual killing. And he testified that he had no idea that these murders were taking place. But on his deathbed, he admits to a fellow inmate that he and Miss Bella had killed 42 men together. She will spike their coffee, bash their heads in, cut up their bodies, and put them in sacks. All he did was the planning or like the digging. He buried them. And it was never clear whether he caused the fire. There are rumors, though, that she faked her death and escaped potential capture, because there were some like really weird rumors going around because of all these men that kept coming and they never knew what happened to them. Or maybe she just wanted freedom to kill again. Now, in 1931, a woman named Esther Carlson was arrested in Los Angeles for poisoning a Norwegian-American, a guy, attempting to steal his money. That woman, though, died of tuberculosis while awaiting trial, but many couldn't help but notice that she bore a striking resemblance to Gunness, and even had a photograph of kids who looked a lot like Gunness' children. And that is the mysterious case of the Black Widow.
Interesting.
Yes, so Miss Bell, the case was never closed because the authorities didn't know if she actually died on the fire or if she just like ran away, because the results didn't come in. Like, they couldn't tell, right? Because, like, the body sustained some injuries. But, like I said, she wasn't big enough to resemble Miss Bell. And just, like, coincidence that this lady from Chicago, who, like, resembles her a lot, killed a Norwegian-American man. I think we all could tell that she was definitely crazy.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, you know, when they found the bodies, the, like, body parts, from my liking of serial killer shows, it seems very, like, gruesome, like, as a one of the traits of a female serial killer. That's why that the arson, what was his name again?
Mr. Ray.
Yeah. I don't know if we can take his words on other things as well. Because it seems like, oh, hey, look, she faked her death, so I can pin some of these killings on her as well. Like the 40 that they committed together, right? Quote unquote committed together. Because
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a very, male serial killer kind of profile, that I have that all the blood and all the you know, dismembering of things.
Do you think that she was maybe set up by him?
I mean, that I feel like that is a possibility. I mean, yes, it is strange that before he came along too, right, where men would show up at her house and they would disappear. But, which, I mean, she could possibly killed all those people as well and then found this new partner with air quotes and realized they can kill a lot more.
Yeah. I think that what you're saying is interesting, because I think that she did kill her two husbands, her two previous husbands, mm-hmm. for the money. And when she came to Chicago... No, sorry. When she came to Indiana and met Ray because he was working at her farm, since they had a relationship, she might have, like, said, like, hey, I did this to my husbands and, like, I got a lot of money. That's how I got this place. Like, you want to join? Like, help me out or something. And he's like, hell yeah. Like, they both planned this But because he fell in love with her, he started getting jealous. And I don't know. It's like those like partners in crime things. Because it didn't seem like he was forced to do anything. And he knew. Although I don't know if he actually like read in the newspapers that, oh, we found sex in there. And like, oh yeah, I was part of that too. Or
mm-hmm.
Oh, what?
I was thinking, or like, he found something and used that as, you know, blackmail against her. Like, oh, you are doing all these killings. Guess what? I'm a psychopath too. I like to kill people too. So I'm going to do it on your farm. And you're not going to say anything because I have this information on you.
I was going to say that because of his jealousy, he could have killed all those men. Because they were in a relationship. So she could have been, this is like reaching, but like she could have been mm-hmm. also like threatened by him. But I mean, she is supposedly able to carry 300 pounds, a whole ass piano. So I doubt that she was like a victim.
But you know, also, I feel like things could be exaggerated too, right? Especially like back in the days too, because oh, she's a serial killer. She could have potentially killed all these people. She's probably really strong.
Well, the neighbors, even before the news of the body being found, mm-hmm. they did say that she carried like those like wooden trunks, like marshmallows. Like, that's how strong she appeared. She was no delicate lady, you know. She was a strong, independent woman.
Strong, independent woman that likes to kill.
Well, we don't condone killing by women. Just, we're trying to, like, lighten the mood because this is a really serious case.
Yeah.
But it is interesting how, I'm really curious if they ever like come up with a movie, because I'm sure there's a lot more research that I just didn't go into that much detail, but this could be a great movie, you know, based on a true story.
Yeah, with all the ambient music in the background,
oh, yeah.
The dark lighting. Oh, I can see it already. Anyways.
But yeah. I don't know. I strongly feel that she just wanted freedom, not just to kill, but from Ray as well. Because with that jealousy, he could have rattletailed her to the police, you know. So if she sets him up, that she murder her, and like because she went to the attorney. And already, like, put in a foundation that, oh, he's threatening me. So, nothing that he said could have potentially been, like, against her because she was being threatened. So, he's just trying to, like, pin these murders on her. It could, like, you know, it could be a case, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was the only one doing it. It was not me.
Mm. I can see that. I can mm-hmm. see that. Yeah.
But I'm really curious about your story. Who are we talking about?
Well, my story is my turn. I see.
It is your turn.
It is my turn. Okay, so I feel mine is an unsolved murder. Till this day, we are still not sure who he is. But he is known as the Phantom Killer. People also call him the Texan. Okay, we're gonna start over. Give me 1 second. I googled how to say this word, but it's been too long that I forgot. Texana? Texerkana. Pronunciation. Texarkana. There we go.
Wow. Fancy.
Okay. Fancy. Okay, we're starting over. Okay, my story is on... my story is an unsolved murder till this day. We are still not sure who he is, but he is known as the Phantom Killer. Also as the... Texana, close enough, Moonlight Murder. That's, So because we don't know who he is, really, we don't have much of a backstory. But he committed a total of 8 attacks in 10 weeks. And five of which ended in murder.
Murder.
So, the attacks begin on February 22nd of 1946. Jimmy, 25, and Mary Jane Larry, 19, went to see a movie and then to a park, which was known to be the local Lover's Lane. Wow.
I've heard of the Lover's Lane. It's actually a pretty, like, popular place, right?
I think so.
Or is it just a term that they put on?
You know, that I was going to say, is it just a term or is it an actual location?
Yeah, because I hear it a lot. But how many Lover's Lane can there be?
I'm sorry. This is such a tangent, but it reminded me. I don't remember where I saw this, but someone was like, they were always watching the news, right? And they say, oh, this person was like threatened at gunpoint. And then in his mind, he goes, why would people keep going to the place gunpoint if so many like crimes happened there?
Right?
No. Think about it. Things are happening at gunpoint.
Which means they pull out
a gun, and he thought the place was called Gunpoint. And he goes, why will people keep going there? I'm sorry. It's so stupid. But it reminded me of Lover's Lane. Is it a location or a descriptive word?
Yeah, because like in horror stories, they all die in the Lover's Lane.
Okay. I think we are just... It's late. It's been a long week for the podcasters.
It has been like a busy week and Sky's been on vacation and like work has just been hell for me. So rough, but we're back and we're talking about, what's it called?
Phantom Killers.
The Phantom Killer and just mystery serial killer or like mystery...
That's the name of my serial killer. Sorry. As we were saying, not doing great this week.
No.
Anyway.
Let's go.
Anyways, they were Jimmy and Mary Jane. Saw a movie. Went to the Lover's Lane. I think just a descriptive word. I don't think that's a location, by the way. When they were interrupted by a man wearing a white sack with eye and mouth holes cut into it, shining a flashlight into their car. Like, can you imagine though? You are doing some sexy time with your date and then you look over, it's just white thing with the flashlight shining into your car.
Well, I was thinking it was the police.
I guess, but why would the police wear a white mask with eye holes cut into it?
No, but like, I mean, when you see it at first, it's just a light on your eye, so
I guess
later on I will realize it's a like a wacko dude, but like at first I will think it's the police.
But I think at first I would think it's like one of our friends messing with us, because they do have my location, and it is something they would do. Let's be honest, it's something they would do. But anyways, so the man in the mask ordered Jimmy to take his pants off and then beat him, and he was in a coma for several days. after that, the killer caught up with Mary Jane because she was trying to escape. He beat her as well and sexually assaulted her with the barrel of the gun that he had threatened them with. Luckily, both of them survived this attack. But unfortunately, they had this different descriptions of the man in the mask. So they didn't really have a good base to go off of who the man in the mask was. And this was in, again, 1946, which is the beginning stages of like forensic education. There's not too much things happening. At this point, they did have like fingerprinting, but there has not been any success with like DNA testing yet. It's not until the 1980s when DNA matching became a thing. So at this period of time, there was really not much the police could do. So about a month later, March 24th, the killer attacked another couple, again at the local lover's lane. Richard Griffin, 29, and Polly Ann Moore, 17, both had been shot several times in the back of the head. Their bodies were discovered the next morning.
Wait, how old were they?
Richard was 29. Polly was 17.
Oh, fuck. Of course. Damn it.
Yeah. So about another month later, April 14th. So, you know, from what it sounds like, he has a very short cooling off period and he only likes to attack couples. But April 14th, Paul Martin, 17, and Betty Jo Booker, 15. It was stated in the police report that she was assaulted and then found murdered after a high school dance. And they have both been shot to death. They were both found dead after like a school dance. But she was... It was in the police report that she was assaulted. And by this point... So now we're at April 14th. By this point, people of the town, which I'm not going to try to pronounce again because I'm having some difficulties, were aware of these horrific crimes. And they began to buy firearms to defend themselves against any possible attacks. And then residents also reportedly booby-trapped their houses with pots and pans full of silverware or old nails. And not much you could do back in those days, I guess. Mm-hmm. The FBI was brought in and the Texas Rangers as well. So I found that they released some documents, like original documents on this crime, because I don't know, maybe they're trying to see if anyone can see anything. But it's 1,000 pages and I was only able to make it through the first 20. But it was in there that they found bullets at the crime scene as a .32 caliber, and they identified that the bullets they found at both crime scenes, where there was actual murders and not just assaults happened, were from the same gun. And at this time, they also had tire tracks and are processing what car was used at both crime scenes. And then they also found 3 unidentified fingerprints. So there was still not much really to go on to find who this killer is. Unfortunately, despite all these efforts, the phantom killer attacked again, this time in someone's home. I was thinking it was probably because, you know, everyone's probably being more cautious now because they're booby-trapping their house and stuff. And then he probably got desperate. The third attack was on... This next attack was on May 3rd. So another month later, it was Virgil and Starks. They were shot in their home. Virgil, 37, was killed. The gun fired through the window from the outside. And then Katie, the wife, heard this and ran into the room and immediately called for help. While on the phone, she received two wounds, one bullet passing through her nose and the other breaking her jaw. And the bullet lodged under her tongue at this point. After, Katie somehow made it to the neighbor's house, despite being hit in the face with two bullets. And like the neighbors let them in and stuff. But I was thinking that must have been crazy for the neighbors, right? You're seeing you like someone in the middle of the night run to your house who has two bullets in their face. Asking for help.
Traumatizing.
Yeah. June. Now we're in June of the same year. So because there was like, that was the last attack really. And then there were a lot of suspects for this crime. So one that stood out the most to me was Swinney. Is his last name. He's 29. And he was arrested June of 1946, so the same year. He was arrested for stealing cars. But as they drove to the police station, he asked, "Will they give me the chair?" And the police was suspicious of this question. And then they were digging through some files, and actually a few weeks earlier, police arrested his wife, Peggy. She's 21. Also for stealing cars. And she actually told the police some incriminating stories. But the law prevented the wife from testifying against her husband, and the detective lacked strong enough evidence to convict. So he was only put away for car theft. But he was one of the most, considered the biggest possibility of being the killer. This crime still have not been solved till this day. I believe there's people that wrote books on this. I'm not sure if there was a movie, but I think there's still people like who loves looking into this stuff.
I mean, just because he said, "Am I gonna get the chair?"
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big enough lead for me to think that he was a killer, though. So I wonder what else they found on those files that were incriminating.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have just been scared and said, "Am I gonna get the chair?" Or
for car theft?
Or was he like kind of smug, like, "Am I gonna get the chair?" You know, We don't know that. The interesting things about murder on unsolved murder cases was, at least for me, the reason why, or their objective. Because for Miss Bell, it seems like at first it was for money, and then she kind of just liked the fact that there was money involved, and she could have this adrenaline of killing a man, because it did mention that she had a ravenous expression, so she seemed like she started liking it. So it became an obsession of some sort in my point of view. So why was this the phantom killer killing?
You know, that's a good question. I was, you know, like you mentioned too, I also really like to think behind the why of some things. And I think for a lot of the times, serial killers are, I don't know what the right word would be, but self-absorbed, really. They asked for this. They wanted this to happen. Yeah, I don't know why he was killing, but it seems like he was only attacking couples.
Right, because all the victims that you mentioned were couples. And I don't know, because at first it seemed like he was just the lover's lane killer for me. But then he started going to people's houses. Maybe because people weren't going to lover's lanes anymore, he couldn't find victims, so he just had to go to houses.
Yeah, that's all I was thinking, because people are, it mentioned people have been more, vigilant of what's happening, because there's a killer out on the loose. People were afraid of going outside and booby trapping their house. and buying more guns in the area.
Mm-hmm. But damn, like shooting out through, like outside to inside, like that's crazy.
Yeah, and also the police said that he is the most lucky person because from all this attacks on, like, just in the public, nobody saw anything, nobody heard anything. They don't have a clear description of who this guy is. Because the only people who really got a look, kind of, at this person was the first attack, which was Jimmy and Mary Jane. But they gave two very different descriptions. I believe Jimmy told the police that he was African-American, like a light-skinned African-American. But Mary Jane said the attacker was white. So really, there was no good description of who this person really is.
Well, I don't think they could, based on skin color, because a lot of like light-skinned African-American are so light that they could be white. I don't think they could identify that because he was masked.
Yeah, but they're just saying that since the descriptions were so different, they couldn't really take a description of one person and put it out there saying, hey, that's what a killer could potentially look like.
They could have just said a light-skinned man with so much height, watch out, and then you see your husband, it's like that exact same description.
It would be, yeah, 5'11". Right? It would be way too general, that description. Yeah. That it really wouldn't do much.
I think he got lucky because he was masked.
But then there was other attacks, right? All the other killers, like the one after a high school dance. Nobody saw anything. Nobody heard anything. And then again, in the different lovers' lane, nobody heard anything. Nobody saw anything. So,
how big was this place? Where was it taking place?
It was, so I think it's on the border of Texas and Arkansas.
Arkansas. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was it like a small town? Because I have no idea what that place is.
Okay, let's see. I'm not too sure. So it was called a sister town because it's in both in Texas and in Arkansas.
Yeah, because if it was like a small town, and that's really weird that they didn't hear anything. But I am doubting that suspect that you mentioned, because I don't think if he's like on a killing spree, why would he steal cars?
So there was some other information that I found 2 seconds ago. That when they were investigating the car thefts, and then the police realized that on the night of the Griffin Moore murders, a car has been stolen in the area, and previously stolen cars has been found abandoned in that same area.
Now that makes sense now that you mentioned it, because if you don't want to get tracked, you steal cars and nobody can, like, that makes sense.
And the police located the former car and arrested Sweeney's wife, Peggy, when she came to retrieve it. And then Peggy confessed in great detail that Sweeney was the phantom killer and has killed Brooke and Martin. But then her story changed in some details across several interviews, and the police believe she was withholding information due to fear of Sweeney or to incriminate herself.
Yeah, because if you give too much information, they might be like, how do you know all that? Are you an accomplice? And also, if, like, let's say Sweeney wasn't the guy, or whatever his name is, and the actual one came, like, oh, you know too much. Even though that's not me, you're like a potential danger to me. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So the police had the biggest conviction was on the wife's, like, interviews and her confessions of things. But Peggy didn't want to, like, really be a witness or quote-unquote witness or, like, be on trial for this to go against her husband. So she didn't want to testify against her husband and then was considered an unreliable witness because her story goes back and forth in different ways. It said law enforcement officers worked for 6 months trying to validate Peggy's confession and tie Sweeney to the murders. They found that on the night of Brooker and Martin murders, the Sweeneys were sleeping in their car under a bridge, and Sweeney was never charged with the murder and was instead tied just to car theft. This article says that there were almost 400 suspects that were arrested that could have been a phantom killer. I guess not.
Man, what kind of town is this? Like, everybody's a suspect. Like, what the fuck? What were they doing?
I feel like it sounded like the police were just really, desperate of catching someone because the town was in such panic.
That makes sense. Well, at least pin the fault to someone until they actually catch the actual one, which they never did, which was a shame.
Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, I don't understand why some serial killers are so, you know, theatrical and, like, dramatic. I wonder what that's about, really. Because putting on a white mask with two eye holes cut out, shining a flashlight into a car seems so movie scene-esque. Like a thriller movie scene. And I always wonder why, what went through their head when they decided, yeah, I'm going to do this and that, instead of just, you know, killing someone.
So I've heard, and I'm not an expert in this, but I've heard that a lot of psychopaths like the attention. And so they will create this image of themselves or like a signature killing. Some would be like keeping the skulls or like making sure that they cut off something from the victim and leave it like that, like that way. And so when they gain popularity, they feel like that feeling of recognition. And there's been some cases, and I cannot name which one, but where they will call the police and say, I'm the killer. Like, I did this. Or, like, giving their own, you know, there's this body here, and there, and there, and there. For that glorification of themselves. Because they don't feel anything, right? So the only thing they can feel is, like, satisfaction of some sort through this, you know?
Like, they're, oh, I'm outsmarting you. I'm so smart and I'm not leaving anything that I can call you and tell you where the bodies are and you still won't catch me. Yeah, I think that's the thing with like being selfless. What is that word? Like a lot of serial killers are really narcissistic because they're like, I'm so smart. You can't do anything to me anyways.
Yeah, and some of them purposely leave evidence to like dangle in front of the police, right? But it's just never enough. And that's just like, not fascinating, but like interesting aspect of the serial killers, like how their world revolves, you know, around themselves and how everybody else is just nothing and they just get to play with, you know, because they don't feel consequences, regret, they don't feel those stuff.
Yeah, they lack that emotion part, which is why a lot of them are psychopaths. That's the word? Sociopath or psychopath? One of them means you don't feel emotions. I don't remember which one.
Sociopath is you don't feel emotions. And then psychopath, you know, I'm going to look up the descriptions because we might be giving like really bad information here.
It's okay. We'll be only giving bad information to three people.
To be honest. let's see, psychopath description, definition.
Mm-hmm.
Psychopath, a person suffering from chronic mental disorder with an abnormal or violent social behavior, an unstable and aggressive person. They are characterized by diagnostic features such as superficial charm, high intelligence, poor judgment, and failure to learn from experience, pathological egocentricity, which is like narcissism, and the incapacity for love, lack of remorse or shame, and impulsivity, grandiose sense of self-worth, pathological lying, manipulative behavior, etc., etc. Now, a sociopath is a person who has a personality disorder manifesting itself in extreme antisocial attitudes and behavior and the lack of conscience. There's a difference, so, between both of them, is that psychopaths are classified as people with little or no conscience. And sociopaths do have a limited, albeit weak, ability to feel empathy and remorse. And then psychopaths are like really good actors. They follow social conventions. And it's a, like a higher level of sociopathy, I think. And so if I were them, I would look for a very charming person that kind of deals with that.
Okay, I have a question. I was always very curious on this question. Do you think serial killers are born or made?
Since it's a mental disorder,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there could be a genetic part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how your DNA has codes and some codes are turned off and some others are like turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe by a traumatic event, because if you look at sociopaths, a lot of them have like really traumatic childhoods. And again, I'm not an expert, this is just me talking, but it could be a combination of the two. What do you think?
You see, I'm not sure. I believe in a combination of the two as well, like the timing and the place, because a lot of the more famous serial killers, let's just say, I hate when they glorify serial killers too, right? They give them quote-unquote cooler names. But anyways, when you do look into their background and their childhood, it is a sad childhood. A lot of them had neglect or abuse in their childhood. And I often just think, would they still be serial killers if they got... they were loved as a kid, or would anything be different? And I guess you just never know.
Yes, because let's say you go back in time to the moment that the person is a child, right? The serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Could you change that person, like giving it a, like even if you give them a like a loving home, like you teach them basic ethics, human decency, I don't know what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a chance that they won't turn up as serial killers?
You know, I feel like they're still messed up, because I do believe there is a genetic part to this, but I feel like they won't be as gone as a high of a rampage, because maybe they, like, if they were loved as a kid, they have the ability to learn empathy and things like that. But then if you think about it, a lot of the serial killers did have a pretty sad childhood. But what's his name? I believe, I may be wrong, I think Ted Bundy had a pretty normal childhood and family, but he was still a serial killer, so.
Well, just a PSA, if your child starts killing animals,
not a good sign.
Put him in jail.
Put him in jail?
Because that's, like, there's a, like, with this year killers, there's a lot of tendencies, right, that happens during their childhood that will kind of mark them as something. But the thing is, just because someone has this tendency, that doesn't mean that they'll do it. So prevention is really difficult.
Yeah, but you know, serial killers tend to be a less and less thing nowadays. It's only because we have more technology to catch them a lot faster. It's not because people are more sane, they're batshit crazy, but we have a lot more technology and a lot, like, continuously inventing technology to catch serial killers. And I feel like society nowadays, especially people in our generation, do care more, a lot more about mental health and like mental being. And I feel like a lot of us are, if we don't want to bring another human into this world because we know we can't give them all the love and attention, a lot of people in our generation are choosing not to have kids. Forever or for now, at least. So I feel like we are advancing in the right direction with the whole nature versus nurture thing. But still, I still think there's a big part of everything that is still just embedded in their DNA. It's not all because of their childhood.
Yeah, I don't want to have kids.
Completely get that.
I'll deal with my little pup, and that's the end of that.
Yeah,
because it's so scary. What if my kid turns out to be a serial killer? Like, not to joke about it, but like, this is a serious issue. There's a possibility.
Then what if, let's say, you discovered your kid and you're discovering some weird behaviors that your kid, let's say he is doing,
like killing animals?
Yeah, what would you do?
Oh gosh, I have no idea. Like, that's the hard part. Like, what would you do? Like, I would take him immediately to like a psychological analyst or something, like a psychologist, and like ask for help, because I wouldn't be able to deal with it.
Yeah.
What about you?
I have no idea either, right? It's so scary to think about. Like, throw away the whole child, let's start over again. Oh gosh. I'm just kidding. But,
well, that will like actually kicked in like the bad childhood and actually start your own serial killer right there. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I think being patient with the kid, you know, first analyzing, going to professionals to analyze, asking for help, what we can do, understanding that, yeah, he might be a little different, but you know, I really don't know. I feel like if it was really embedded in them, no matter how much love you give them, nothing's going to change. That's why I think the most like dangerous serial killers we had is not all just because they had a bad childhood. So, you know, you never know. It's scary.
It is scary. My kid could be the president, or he could be a serial killer. There's a possibility for everything.
You never know.
Or both, you know.
A serial killing president. Anyway. Okay, I feel like we always end things on a pretty, like, light mood, right? So I don't know if you heard of this, but is like Florida. We all know Florida is crazy. There's a lot of interesting people that lives in Florida. And so there's this thing where if you search a date, whatever date it is, plus Florida man, you're going to come up with some really interesting articles.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to do right now. Today is April 26th. Florida man. So we're gonna see what the headline is.
Interesting. Okay. I'm excited.
Meth smoking Florida man attacks mattress in jealous rage.
What? Tell me more. I need more information on this.
Okay, let's see. This was published April 26, 2019. An apparently hallucinating Florida man used a bedpost to attack a mattress where he thought a man was hiding. Uh-huh.
So he was like delirious and hallucinating.
Yeah, he was on meth, attacking a mattress. In a Facebook post, the... don't know how to pronounce that. Okasaw? Whatever. County Sheriff Office quotes the girlfriend of 37-year-old Felipe O'Quinn?
O'Reilly.
Okay, let's just call him Felipe.
Okay.
As saying that he began acting erratically. It's a hard word for us. Early Friday, the girlfriend told deputies. Oh, we're doing rough. Thought she was cheating on him with the man and thought he saw in the mattress where he was hiding. She said Felipe hit the mattress with the bedpost, ripped it apart, and locked the bedroom door. She was able to escape and call the police.
Yeah, because what if he, like, hit her or something?
Yeah. The sheriff's office said Felipe later admitted to having smoked meth.
Don't do drugs, kids.
That's funny, though. Meth-smoking Florida man attacks mattress.
That's pretty odd.
That's hilarious. This was May 26th, not April 26th. But Florida man arrested for attacking daughter with pizza after she didn't want to eat with him.
Oh, gosh. Like, that's the weirdest thing. Well, I get that, like, maybe you don't spend enough time with your teenage daughter. I'm guessing it's teenage daughter. But, like, hit her with a pizza? Mm. What are you, Italian?
What are you, Italian?
I'm sorry, my Italian listeners that we have zero of, but anyways, if you're Italian in like 5 years, let us know.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Don't do drugs, don't be hitting people with pizza or foods, and don't be killing.
Don't be hitting mattresses. Ask for help.
Exactly. And if you're a serial killer and you're listening to us, please.
What's the message?
Go find help.
Oh, go find help is the message.
Go find help, please. And if you see me in the street, don't kill me. Just pass me by.
Just pass me by.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are nice people, we swear.
We are just podcasters living their lives.
That's doing pretty badly. This episode, this is going to be a mess. I apologize already. Next one will be better.
I hope so. There's a lot of things that we are doing at the moment. And like, we really want to take this time to like connect with each other between Sky and I, and also like share with you guys. It's fun so far. We did have some technical difficulties with the posting of last Tuesdays, but we're back on track and we want to keep going and have fun. And I think I already said that, but anyway, we want to have fun.
that's the most important thing, really, right? It's not I do apologize to the listeners if this episode is all over the place, but honestly, as long as we had fun, I don't care what you think.
if you guys did like laugh at least at something, let us know. We do have our social media up.
Yeah, we have an Instagram. Don't know who uses Facebook anymore. Not me, but you know, look at, we have that.
Yeah, I haven't even looked at it yet, so I've just seen Instagram. But if you want to give us a follow, we'll probably follow back. Because we want to see who are listening to us, and we're nosy bitches, so we want to see who you are. Mm-hmm. Interact with us. We do have an email as well in case you want to send some stories. Because of time, we're not going to read a Reddit story, but next time we will with our next episode. But until then, you've been listening to the Homebodies podcast with myself, Charlie, and
Sky.
And we are excited to be back on track with our scheduling. Our lives are a little all over the place, so if there's like another missed episode, we are sorry in advance, but let's keep grooving, let's keep working, and let's keep dancing, because always want to dance with somebody.
Hey.
Well, guys, have fun, and we'll see you guys in the next episode.
The next episode.